And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 97. We're back. We're quarantined. I am Silas Lindenstein, your host, and I am here via Skype, via another Skype episode with Kat Alvarado.
I keep yes.
On. You know,
hello.
I did live in Southern California for a while. So I do occasionally I can say names correctly from there. And now I'm up here and it's all Russian names and I never can say anything right. And Kat has been she's been a Facebook friend of mine for a while now. I don't know if it was a random friend request or if you were coming to see her. You know, there's that point in friendships or in comedy when you just start adding comics that you don't know. And that might have been one of those that I just grabbed her. But she's been a delightful Facebook friend because we start seeing someone who like, oh, politically, hey, I think we're in that same ballpark, you know. Start seeing that and also being a comedian. She's a comedian. She's a podcaster. She's got a wonderful podcast called The Villains of History. Right? Is that did yes, I say right?
No, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so if you want to know about the bad guys and girls of history, you'll check her podcast on. She's got two seasons of it, and we'll put a link on the Black and a Half website so you can go, people can check that out and hopefully subscribe and get those listens. So we spend this episode talking about, we talk about what it's like being quarantined right now, what we're doing, some of our thoughts on it. We talk a little bit about election stuff going on and word bungles that they had and get to learn a little bit about her, which is, that's one of the things that this is one of my favorite kinds of episodes where I have somebody new on that I don't know that much about and I get to find out their history. And if you're a friend of Kat's and you just know her from comedy, you get to find out how she got there, you know? And it was a fun episode. And you'll have to listen to it. And of course, if you if this is your first time here, if you could please go to Facebook or not to Facebook, iTunes, and give us a like. And if you can leave a review, that would be fantastic so that we can share Kat with everybody. And this episode, as always, big thanks to Skyline Properties, who lets us record in their office when it's not quarantined. And if you are in the Seattle, Washington area and you were looking to buy or sell a home, you can go to silasgetsreal.com and go ahead and I'll hook you up with an agent, which is me. If you're in the Seattle area, or if you're actually in another part of the area, another part of the country, I have a network of real estate professionals that I can hook you up with, and we'll do that. All right. And I have no upcoming shows. I usually announce my shows that are coming up, but they're all canceled. Everything I have is canceled. I even had a Comic-Con type thing in June. It was a new con in Snohomish. It was in June or July, and they canceled it because they're like, we don't know what's going to happen, so we're just canceling right now. Like, okay. So I have nothing. So I can't even say, like, hey, if you want a comic, I'll come do your show. I don't know. One day, this will all be really... Kat, when do you think? What do you think?
I'm giving it May. I think May it'll lighten up. I think we're going to be in this through April.
So early May, you think will be released?
Yeah. I mean, look, if we have a good, strong response and everybody complies, I think we can stave this off. I think we're already shutting down. I think we're going to be in good shape. China managed to control it and they've got so many people. So if they can do it, we can do it.
They're good at listening to authoritarians, though.
I'm
hoping our independence doesn't get us the best of us.
We have capitalism. But I mean it.
Yeah.
I mean, so we hate it. when there's inequality, and I know that that sucks, but the beauty of profit is that there are like dozens of companies that are racing and working round the clock to come up with the amount of tests we need. They are racing to come up with the vaccines, with treatments, all of that. Because of why? The value of a dollar. Also the principle, but mostly the value of a dollar. And that goes far. There's a lot of money in curing this.
Yeah.
And damn it, they're going to cure it. And they're all going after it. So I think we're going to get that much further, that much faster. Thanks to capitalism. And I'm going to hate mail for that.
That's fine.
I'm absolutely for Medicare for all. So please go fuck yourself.
And that, please stay tuned and listen to this episode number 97, Cat Alvarado.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by. Join us, impressive. Join us, impressive. Join us, impressive.
Live long, live long, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper, and prosper. I got a bidet.
Uh-huh.
The bidet arrived today.
So what? Where did you find the idea to get a bidet?
So I've been curious for a while. Now, there's a good friend of mine, Emmett Montgomery. He's a Seattle comedian. And he's been preaching about the bidet for a couple of years now. About it's a life changer. And I've kept wanting to try it. I was like, my daughter had an experience on her birthday where we went to a sushi restaurant. And she went to the bathroom and she just like, suddenly she came out like, mom, come with me, come with me, mom. Like, she's like, what's going on? Like, we're kind of freaked out. And then it turned out my daughter just pressed this button in there, didn't know what it was. And so it squirted her. And so she was like, what is this? And, so we always joke about that. And lately, and then with the virus and everyone grabbing toilet paper, it did make me start thinking about it. Like, yeah, everyone kept rubbing it in that had a bidet. Like, well, actually, I don't. It's Seattle, so you got all these bidet people. I don't know.
Yeah. And, actually, I need toilet paper. I got a bidet.
Yeah.
Well, I got the idea from a comedian myself. I was clicking through people's stories, and I saw a comic who was like, bitches, I don't need toilet paper. I got a bidet. And I was like, oh, brilliant. And I jumped right on it. I went and got one. And, of course, I heard that they're out of them on Amazon, or they're starting to a lot of the bidet companies, their sales have spiked. Yeah. And some of them are sold out.
Did you order one?
Yes, I did. And we got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay. The Lux? Did you get the Lux?
Yeah. I don't know Luke's? What I got.
I asked people's opinions, so I was getting.
I went straight for the mid-tier. It was whatever was highest rated, but not expensive. I was like, we're gonna go for that one. Should be fine.
So we just got it today. I haven't installed it yet. I was looking at them and I saw this one and I was like, I think I want to do it. It said 14 left, so I was like, yeah, okay. And so I wanted to talk to my wife a little more, and then I went back to order it and it said back in stock the 27th, and I was like, no. What, this isn't Christmas? These shouldn't be running out.
That?
Yeah. But then I saw, suddenly I got a notification today said it's out for delivery. And I was like, what? So someone must not have finished their order or something, you know, and it got released or whatever.
So wait, how long was it between when you were going to order it and when you talked to your wife and came back?
One day. It was the next day.
Okay. A day. That's on
you. Yeah, but it's not Christmas. I actually had no clue that they were getting massively ordered because of this. Like, there's been surprise. The other surprise for me, that out at the grocery store that's gone, the Greek yogurt. I would not have expected that, but I walked in the other day and the entire, we have Tillamook here. That's the a big brand, local kind of from Oregon, and Chobani, all gone. The only ones they had, there's a couple blackberries and then some weird ones that nobody wanted. I don't know. And that was it. And I was like, if you're going to hoard stuff, you can't hoard yogurt. That has no lasting power. You can't.
It's weird. Well, I've got a friend, actually, this guy, Liam Womack. I don't know if you know him. He's a comic here in California. I don't really know him. He's one of those just on Facebook friends.
Yeah.
Who messaged me because I posted to my story. I was like, tell me about your quarantine. What's your quarantine life like? I want to know, just to see who would reply. And he works at a grocery store. And I'd love to tell you. Okay, so some of the stuff he sent me. He said, if people stopped buying today, which was Saturday, it would take the warehouses 2 months to catch up. And that's in the Central Valley of California, where it's a little bit more rural. So LA is going to be worse. He said that manufacturers will not be able to keep up with demand because for Super Bowl, there is months of planning and pre-orders that go in for chips, meat, beer, et cetera.
Okay.
So the manufacturers, they have time to produce and organize the amount that they need and get the supplies and all of that. He said in the last 5 days, they sold almost 4 times the dollar amount of the Super Bowl each day. And that was out of sports. This wasn't even like a real grocery store.
Yeah.
He says they made $11,000 in groceries 2 years ago for the Super Bowl, and that was like their record-breaking number. Yesterday, meaning last Friday, grocery alone, it was $38,000. Thursday was $43,000.
Wow.
And now staple items are sold out. All this isn't factoring total store sales. That's just one department, apparently. He didn't say what department. They're in the fifth largest city in California. And they're not even the main store because, like I said, they're Sprouts. It's like a second tier place. Okay. He said they ordered, he messaged me again on Monday. So that was Saturday. Monday, he messages me. He goes, we ordered $55,000 worth of groceries, got $14,000 worth on the truck. So that means, I guess $30,000 of rice, water, toilet paper, beans, canned veggies, et cetera, are all shorted. Like the manufacturers just couldn't send it along. So that's $30,000 worth that the warehouse is out of, because they have warehouses that are like central and then they like supply chain it out.
Yeah.
And the warehouses are like running low. So now the warehouses have to wait for the manufacturer. Yeah.
And now I'm curious how, and I'll see how I do if this, I'm wondering, does this mean, are they going to end up selling more baked beans this year, or will it be the same amount? It's just everybody bought them now. And then at the end of the year, they're like, oh no, people are still like, I didn't do panic shopping at first. I was just going in to get regular stuff. I grab an extra toilet paper. Okay, you know, that's what everyone should do. Just an extra whatever. But then yesterday, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Yesterday, I think I saw when I saw the news that they're going to put San Francisco on lockdown, I was like, oh, there's going to be a rush. And I wasn't sure. The story hadn't been confirmed yet, but I told my wife, I said, I'm going to the store. Because we don't have meat. I don't have really meat. I've been picking up other things. So I don't want to go back. And if we're going to get in a lockdown, I just don't like the uncomfortableness of leaving and potentially having to explain where I'm going to anybody, right? If it's how locked down it is. So I just wanted to, like, I'm going to go and I grab my dog. I'm like, we're not going back to the store. So if you want anything, you need to come with me. You want to pick stuff out. So she's like, okay, I will. And so we went there and I spent $450 because I was buying, like, I'm a snob now with food. Like I don't like to freeze proteins before I cook them. So I buy the day of, and even though it's better, it's better cost wise to buy in bulk and freeze some, but I don't. And so I did for this, I just bought here's 2 packs of drumsticks. We're getting 2 packs of breast. Here's a roast to have later. I was doing all that, but they were out. Everyone was out of rice, and which I wish I had thought of that. I hadn't thought of buying extra rice earlier and flour. Cause they were out of pasta, but I was like, we could just make our own pasta. So we'll go over and grab some flour. Then they were out of flour. I grabbed some gluten-free flour. I don't even know if I can make pasta with it, but
yeah, I think pasta is gluten.
I know that you can buy gluten-free pasta, but I think it's rice usually. Anyway, I was like, well, in case we want to, I don't know, flour something. So that was my panic shopping. And I saw the store started getting filled up as I was in there, and I was like, oh, news is out. They know.
And the scary thing is, you could catch the virus while you're at the grocery store. That's terrifying. Yes. My was saying you got to wipe down all your groceries when you bring them home. You need to, take some whatever diluted vinegar or whatever you use as your detergent and just wipe them down, because there's all kinds of people at the store, because the virus can live on shelves, especially on metal. It lives forever on metal. I'm not forever, but a while. So you just imagine that person is they're picking up their bottle. They're going, oh, I don't want this.
Yeah.
Putting it back.
Oh, I saw an old man cough into a package of meat the other day. It was old.
God.
And I'm like, are you? And that was another reason I was like, you know what? The best reason I can see to actually do the buying all this at once is I don't want to keep coming back in here and grabbing grocery carts every time.
Yeah. And every time you're out there, you're exposing yourself. Yeah. So you want to reduce that. And my friend was also telling me, my mom here, I live with my mom and my stepdad, and my mother, she's got asthma and diabetes. So she's a little bit higher risk than the average, the general population. So my friend was saying, Kat, you need to be the one going to the grocery store, not her.
Yeah.
Fortunately, my mom, she just went. she's just used to being the parent. So that's what she. So there is nothing I could do at that point. I feel bad now. I'm like, shoot, I really should have been the one who went out there, because I've got the immunity. But then either way, I would come home and I would give it to her. So it's kind of irrelevant. Yeah.
It's a wild time. Where do you live exactly right now? Like city?
Just out of Los Angeles. So, it's in Los Angeles, but I'm in the suburbs of Los Angeles in a little part called Granada Hills or Northridge.
Okay. Yeah. I know it.
Northridge earthquake.
Yeah. Hey.
That is where I am from. I grew up here. And I live with my mom because LA is expensive.
And expensive. And you're a comedian, which is it known in LA to bring in a lot of the dollars?
Yes, that is correct.
Are you? I don't mean to say only a comedian, but do you do more than comedy? Do you do acting or anything?
So I do do some. I do do acting. I do a lot of improv. I Groundlings.
Groundling? Okay.
Also, IO West. I did IO back when that was a thing. So that is the Los Angeles branch of Improv Olympic, which closed. Unfortunately, but so I've been alum of those, which is cool. So that stand up, it's great.
And the podcast,
and I have a podcast called Villains of History.
Yeah, I was very fascinated by that. Very fascinated by the entire what made you think of doing a podcast dedicated to the villains?
Oh God, because I fucking hate dictators. Last year I was really thinking about my heritage and what that means to me, and what does it mean to say I'm Latinx? What does it mean to say I'm Nicaraguan? What's the common experience that is under my skin and in my blood? And I did a lot of soul searching, and then it was April 2018 when the president, air quotes president, of Nicaragua. Did some stuff. He did some law changes, policy stuff, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And people decided to protest in the streets because they didn't like it. And there was also a fire that was going on in the rainforest. People also didn't like that. So people decided to do some peaceful protests, and he actually had his guards shoot at the people to disband the protests. They shot at them with tear gas, and then it escalated. Eventually, there were snipers shooting into crowds. All in all, just the first weekend alone, like 25 people died. By the end of the next 6 months, it was something like 300 or more people had died in the back and forth of people protesting, the cops killing them, killing their family members. There were something like 1,000 people missing or taken hostage, not hostage, taken prisoner. And they would find their bodies of these people who are missing with like missing fingers, missing fingernails, missing toes, because, you know, torture is coming. Oh, are you leading a revolution? Tell us who your friends are, and they go after them. So it's crazy.
I think we don't appreciate here protesting, like what happens. Like we get people angry. We get people out there protesting, and then they get really mad if it gets broken up. And then, of course, the people get mad. Oh, you're interrupting my traffic, right? And like, I'm trying to get home, and you're in traffic. Stop it. Like, we don't appreciate that. Not only do people in other countries are they protesting at risk of death.
Yes.
Of, you know, if you are interrupting traffic. It really doesn't, like, if you're the person in the car, like, it's an inconvenience, but it's not like you don't have to worry about the cops aren't going to start shooting here. Like, I'm sure it's happened, but it's not happening.
I mean, they literally nowadays. Were terrorizing the people for their protests. Like, that's how they get them to stop speaking up. That's how they get people to stop talking to each other about their opinions and politics or sharing things. You know, you could have gotten in trouble for, oh God, it's ridiculous, for wearing red lipstick. Because at one point, there were some prisoners. Yeah, it's true. There were prisoners and women prisoners who said, okay, we're going to wear red lipstick to show that we're here as political prisoners versus the other prisoners who are there for, you know, stealing or whatever. And so then the women on the outside started wearing red lipstick. There was a hashtag called Yo Soy Pico Rojo. And so that happened. And so then at one point you could be arrested or, you know, harassed by the police or have your family harassed and threatened by the police for wearing red lipstick.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's calmed down and people are wearing red lipstick again, but okay.
Red lipstick, just getting arrested for wearing. And yeah, I couldn't even imagine that here, you know, you can wear a Black Lives Matter shirt and not worry about like just getting arrested for it.
Oh, yeah. No, you could get arrested for that. You could be arrested for having the flag. So at one point, the blue and white flag, it meant you're in favor of democracy in Nicaragua. And the red and black is the flag of the Sandinistas, which is the party of the dictator, Daniel Ortega. So if you were wearing or showing your blue and white flag, you could be arrested.
Wait, is Ortega still in power there?
Yeah.
Jesus, I thought he'd be dead by now, just out of age.
You might be thinking of Castro.
No, I remember. Just look, yeah, I was in the 80s. Like, Ortega came into power in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
So I just thought by now he'd have to have died.
No, he has not died.
It's weird because I remember that part of my growing up, I would hear about everything in Central America so much. And because I'm much older than you, so I heard it growing up. And then it just kind of, you know, diminished. I don't know why, but things just kind of silenced. And I don't know, our fair weather caring, I don't know, about what's going on.
Well, the Cold War ended, and I think people just stopped caring as much about anything, really.
Dictators. There used to be a time that we were very angry at dictators. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I know now they say we're like, authoritarians. We hate authoritarians. Bernie had to explain it. And I get it. Like, okay, were you, I forget if that was a discussion. one of the things I really liked about I like about you is your political takes, and you do bring you've definitely made me think about some things that I think that's the, I've said this before, sort of, it's being of an African American, even though I'm not, I could pass as anything. I care about Black issues, and those are my, I care about all issues, but my it's like my major is a black problems in the U.S. You know, with a minor in, minor in women's issues, because I've had women in my life all the time and always thinking of that. And I just don't think, like, there's some issues I don't think about Cuba, really. It doesn't affect me in my daily life. It doesn't affect anyone in my heritage. So it doesn't come up very much. And so it's interesting to hear someone like you, like, when you bring up stuff from the Latin American countries. And I'm like, that's not something I'm thinking about right away. And now, I started thinking about when Bernie said the thing, and I was like, oh crap, he just lost Florida. What?
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Because, you know, we're not, or the same thing when Pete Buttigieg, whatever, Buttigieg, when he said the thing about the 60s or the revolution, you know, nobody wants the revolution of the 60s. And my first thought was, you mean like civil rights?
Yeah.
And I don't think he was dismissing. I just literally don't think he was thinking about civil rights. It didn't come to his mind because those aren't a top issues. Like, it's not a top issue for him. And so what that told me was, like, Black issues are going to be something someone's going to have to sit there and talk to you about, because they're not on the forefront of your mind, because you should have thought a bunch of people are going to think of the civil rights as soon as you say that.
Right? Yeah.
And
don't really know that much about the Cold War or when the Cuban Revolution happened. I mean, you name when the Cuban Revolution happened. I don't know the year. It was the 60s.
Well, because, you know, maybe more people know now because there was a mutants movie about it. When they went to fight Castro. So they might know now because of Marvel. But were you bothered by that, actually? The Bernie's remark about the the reading that they had a good reading program.
Oh yeah. So which one was this during the debate? Was the one that he did a couple of weeks ago. What are we talking about?
Well, so he had said it in an interview, I think on 60 Minutes, where they were accusing him, and he's like, well, you know, yeah, like, but you know, they have a good literacy rate. So not all bad things happen. Like, even though it's a bad thing, I mean,
yeah, well, I'm pretty sure the Nazis had a good anti-smoking campaign.
Right.
Sure, everyone did something, right? I have a friend who's, I think he has like severe Asperger's. So he's a very brilliant guy. He works on Wall Street, but he's like, I don't do creative things. Those are not for me. Like, he's his brain is an Excel spreadsheet, and he has very little in the way of like understanding empathy, but I think he's definitely not neurotypical.
Right.
So I just kind of like listen and nod and go, okay, this is what James thinks, and how James thinks. I know he's not a bad person. He just doesn't compute things the way the rest of us compute things.
Right.
And we were chatting and catching up. He's an old friend from college. And I go, oh, so what books have you been reading? He says, well, I've been, and mind you, this is a guy who makes like hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on Wall Street. Like, very successful man.
Yes.
He goes, I've been reading a lot about I forgot the name of the guy. But he said the name of some guy, and it's like the guy, the economic czar of Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to look up his name. I'm looking it up. What was this guy's name? I don't know. Who was the, I don't know. I'm not seeing the name. economic
right.
policy. Nazi.
But he, some dense reading, though, I imagine.
I'm sure it was, and we both went to school for economics, so, you know, go, of course, and he's a very bright guy. But it was basically the Nazi, the economic director of the Nazi Germany, the guy who set up their economy. And he's like, well, it's great reading because he was very effective at what he did. And I think there's a lot to learn there. You know, he did bad things, obviously, but they were good at some things. And it's important to understand the takeaways. And I'm like, yeah, oh, good thing you're not a public persona, because that would get you canceled so hard.
Yeah. And this is, oh yeah. And joining the program right now is my daughter, Willow. She's coming to say goodnight to me right now because we're at my house again because we're in quarantine. Hey, you say goodnight? Mwah. Goodnight. Bye, Buggy. Finn, night-night. It's okay. Hi. Okay. No, he's just waving. What can you do? You're a parent in quarantine. That's all you can.
Yeah.
I was kicked out of my office, by the way. My office actually sent emails around saying, don't come to the office. Don't come to the real estate office. It's funny. But what do you think of that? The whole idea that, Do we not look at anything somebody was learned, that something that was learned because of the dictator or the government that it was?
You know what? I think there are things we can learn and shouldn't throw away, because sometimes it's life or death, and damn it, you need to learn things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there are some contributions to medical science that save lives today that might have been come up with by the Nazis during Nazi Germany. And yeah, I wish that that wasn't the case. I think we all do. But if it's like a technique that is now helping heart patients or something, we can't just, we can't do that technique because the Nazis did it, even though it saves lives. You know, at some point, you have to be an adult and just accept that not everything is clear, is clean cut. When it's not critical to life or death, throw it the hell out.
But you know, I think I just get bothered by, I feel like it's the real, like, you know, they used to say that people would do these gotcha questions. Mm-hmm. And that I feel like that's, we look on these moments that we can pounce on to say like, oh, can I make more of that than it was? Is he now saying, like, they're trying, like, people just trying to make it sound like, he said, oh, they have a good reading program, but he wasn't saying that Castro was a great dictator.
And well, the thing is, it's like a dog whistle a little bit of that stuff. Cause you know that whatever he's showing us is less extreme than what he is, right? Everybody isn't showing who they really are when they're running. They are showing a polished, cleaned up version. If we know he's super left-leaning,
he combs his hair this time, but he didn't comb his hair before, right? So I don't know. Maybe it is genuine.
Right. But in any case, I think, you know, whatever somebody's ideas are, they're going to be a little bit more intense when it's really them and they're not running.
Right.
In the same way that I think, like, a lot of people were like, oh, Obama's going to do so much change. And then really, he was a little bit more of a centrist than we thought he would be, right? I think some people would agree with that.
I understand the feeling of that. I actually was surprised that everyone thought how much he was going to try to do. Because I especially heard it from the Black community, was like, I thought he was going to do more for us. Like, we finally got in there. And my thought was, he can't. Because if he did that, that's the last Black president. Because all they did was he just took care of the Black community and that was it. Like, that's what you would have heard. So he had to try to do programs that would help Black people, because of basically it was a good program. Well, but it had to help everybody.
I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding too, though, about like how I think we're more enlightened now today about things like systemic racism and how, what generates privilege and how it's more of like the encompassing system. I feel like prior, you know, back before the Obama days, maybe we were a little bit less enlightened about it and maybe thought that it was coming from a more central place. Yeah. Like there was more that a central figure could do. Now we understand like, oh, there are limits to that. And also it's ingrained in the way our laws work and our economy works. And there's a lot more that that racial justice and equality, a lot more to that than meets the eye. And now we know. Yeah. I think we all have learned a lot more the past decade, really. But back to my podcast.
Oh, yeah. The villains.
The whole revolution in Nicaragua and thinking about dictators is what inspired me to do Villains of History, because I felt like people really needed to learn more. People don't know enough. You know, there are kids who are in college and don't know even what the Cold War was, let alone who Fidel Castro is.
Right.
We really take for granted, I think, that, you know, those of us who were lucky to be in good schools and good areas, I was very fortunate. I went to a charter school. We all know what happens with charter schools.
Yeah.
It ends up being, you know, higher income, the lower income people end up in shittier schools all pooled together, and the, you know, the good families end up together, and the good teachers go to the charter schools, the bad teachers end up at the non-charter schools, and you just get this tier, this separation of people. I think that we take for granted, if you're a smart person out there, you might be taking for granted that you got to learn the things you learned, which doesn't mean that people who are knowledgeable and smart are better. And I think that's something we should all be aware of. It means that we were blessed to be in the right schools at the right times with the right teachers. And that's what's cool about podcasts, that if you are a person who knows a lot and wants to share, you can do that.
So are you basically sharing, are you going after the villains that you already knew about, or have you had to dig to find villains, or can you just ramble off the villains off the top of your head pretty well?
I could ramble them off. I was there one day and I was like, let's see if this is a viable podcast. And I just tried to name as many as I could. And there are somewhere I was like, wasn't there a dictator of like Czechoslovakia once? And I Googled him like, oh yeah, that guy. And and eventually I had like a list of like 200.
Oh, wow.
Various war criminals and mass murderers, dictators, U.S. presidents. I had, you know, I had the guy who founded the KKK in there. Like, there's a lot of, like, villain. Sometimes I like to get controversial and choose somebody who's, like, sort of not a villain, like Oppenheimer. I did him in an episode because he helped to, with the Manhattan Project, to create the nuclear bomb. And, like, oh, nukes. Right, but at the same time, he saved everybody by inventing it before the Nazis.
Right.
Why I did his episode, because I'm like, that's a cool conversation to have. Just understanding like the nature of good and evil and how it's mixed. Like someone who creates something that is horrible is also a hero. That tension. It's fun to explore.
So have you had to learn a lot more doing the podcast?
Absolutely. I mean, when I'm currently on a hiatus from it, I got kind of burnt out because like literally my entire Sunday would be like, I would wake up 8 a.m, start researching, probably spend like 2 to 4 hours researching, take a break, eat lunch, person would come over and we'd chat, record the podcast. And then I'd take a break. And that would usually take me like 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. Usually they come over, we chat first, then eventually we do the podcast, and then we chat afterwards. Then they leave. Then I take a break. I eat some food, and then I edit. And by the time I'm done editing, by the time I'm putting together graphics, by the time, you know, everything's done, it's my whole entire Sunday, every single week. And I started to like just, booking people for it and scheduling them, having them drop out, having to look for them last minute, who can replace somebody. Yeah. Oh, God. It's a lot of work. I'm glad I did it, but boy, do I need this break. Yeah. I put out seasons. I'm like, here's a season. I'm going to stop for a while. And when I recover, I'll do it again.
I think that's a good way to go too. I think a lot of podcasts feel pressured to you gotta be consistent. You gotta go every week and there. But I think podcasts can be like, you know, Netflix series. It's okay to put out 10 and then come back a year later and put out another 10. I feel like you get pressure that everyone has to be like a Marc Maron or the Nerdist and press go with them. Like, oh, it's interesting. People will come back to it. You know, they'll look forward to it. And like, I definitely want to listen to, I'm going to be checking out your first season because I want to. And oh, I love
my first season is the best season. Second season is pretty good. And then I'm looking forward to season 3 because once I get some, what I want to do is I really want to limit the number of episodes. Maybe I'll only do 15 season 3 and like put in a lot of, the first season I actually did put in a lot of care into who I chose for each one.
Yeah.
Season 2 got away from me and I was kind of like chasing after and I had to just stop it and be like, no, my quality of my guests is going down. So season 3, I'm going to really really curate who I have on and take more time to research, make that good.
I hope you do like a pilot, like at least one episode, like a video, because I think it sounds like something I would see on Netflix, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a cool thing to do. And I have a friend who is willing to help me out with this kind of stuff, so I might do that. We're this whole pandemic thing.
Yeah. Well, I do think we're going to see a lot of, there's going to be a lot of podcasts coming out in the next few weeks because everyone's at home. Nobody's going to open mics. They're going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to try the podcast that I've been meaning to. So here's this podcast.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to have people over is the thing. So you can't have guests.
But well, hey, look what I'm doing here, right?
There's going to be a lot of podcasts with video chats.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people breaking it. There's the house. Here we have this comedian household. There's actually two comic houses. Each of them have like 6 or 7 roommates, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
They all live together. So they're, you know, they can do that. And yet, you know, I don't think people quite get, because we're seeing. I hear the social distancing, right? But what I haven't heard so much was them actually say, don't go. Like when I first heard it, my impression was because they said, oh, well, you can be, you know, groups of 50 people or. So at first I was thinking, oh, well, you could have like one person come over or something, like you can hang out with one other person, until I had to actually think about it and go, oh, wait, they just want families together or whatever. Oh, this is more of a quarantine, I guess.
If you paid attention they were tightening the noose.
Yeah.
First they went, okay, 250 people or more banned. Okay, now it's 100, at least here in California. Now it's 100 or more banned, then 50 or more banned. And then Trump is going, it's 10 or more banned. Yeah. And then now that the cities are going on lockdown, they're basically saying, shelter in place.
Yeah.
Do not leave unless you're getting food, medicine, or exercise with your dog outside.
Yeah.
While maintaining 6 foot distance.
It's so interesting because Trump said today, I was watching the conference, part of it, and he said, it's a suggestion. It's a suggestion. We'd like you to do it. Because he so much doesn't want to do the, a requirement, right? Because the second he does it, it's a no win because actually it's weird because people, they stretch so far to defend him, right? Like him instituting, I mean, not martial law, but of him saying, demanding everyone has to stay inside goes against so many of Republicans' principles. Like that's not what they do, but they have to defend him. Where I'm like, right now on my side, on the liberal side is like, oh, we should all be doing this out of responsibility. We don't need an order, right? So we're just going to go do it. Hey, make the best of it. And so, but he's just trying to like not tell everyone to do it, but just hoping everybody will. Just
Well, that's one thing that's interesting about the West Coast, and I think it's true, you know, it's true of California, SoCal. I think it's true all the way up to Washington, Oregon, at least the cities. I know that Washington, Oregon both have, like, you know, their own, like, libertarian gun-toting crews as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, us coastal elites have a culture of caring for people. We do. Yeah. And we have a sense of, like, there's this really interesting, like, ethic and morality where we give a shit about what happens to the puppies. We give a shit about the people who are growing, who are picking our crops, and do they have proper health care, and are they being taken care of, or are they being run out of the country? What's happening to the refugees? Like, we care.
Yeah.
And I was in an Uber in New York just 2 weeks ago. Yes, there was coronavirus at the time. I'm in the clear as of Saturday.
Okay.
My Uber driver was just saying how he goes, "You guys care over there. We don't care over here." That is to over there. Like, everybody in California seems to give a shit, and everybody here is like, "Oh, you got stabbed. Sorry, I got places to go." And that's how, just, he's like, that's just how it is on the East Coast. Like, people are like, you know, it's nice to think about that, but I got to think about me and what's happening. How am I going to pay my bills today? What's happening to me today? And so that's why we're like, oh, we got to do it out of responsibility. And they're like, you know what? Unless someone's going to put a gun to my head, I need to get my shit done. I'm going to get my shit done, you know?
Well, that is sort of interesting, though, to think about that. So when we judge somebody, a New Yorker, when we judge Bloomberg or Giuliani on their policies that we didn't like, right? Is there a point that that it wasn't even as, not that it wasn't a big deal, but I was like, I wonder if some of the policies weren't as harsh as to a New Yorker as they were to us.
No, they weren't at all. I don't think they were at all.
They were like, well, yeah, you had to do it. We just had to do it.
New Yorkers are like not happy that their whole city is safer now.
Right.
Of course. They're like, yeah, he did stop and frisk, but you know what? It was like, either you go outside and you get mugged or stabbed, or you have the police crack down, do what they got to do, and make it safe, right? In, you know, ideology and political correctness be darned, what matters is, did you get the job done? Just get the fucking job done. And yeah. I think that's very much how New Yorkers are, hence why they elected these people in the first place. Right. And they like them. They're like, just get the fucking job done.
Yeah.
And we're over here actually thinking about, like, but the consequences, that's the way to do it. You should have done it in the right way that is fully ethical. And we don't, I have a problem with that. We judge people in completely different parts of the country about stuff that we don't understand what folks were going through, what fears were going through. Like, it'd be like people 10 years from now judging what the government is doing about corona today. Like, I can't believe they made people shelter in place. Well, it was a very infectious disease. And
I mean, sometimes I feel like the villain here, but I'm old enough that I remember the 94 crime bill that Biden gets shit about now for writing it. And I remember getting an argument with someone else who was my age, because I was like, dude, granted, I had lived in Massachusetts a long time, so that might be why I was thinking this way, because I was East Coast. But I argued with him about it, because I said, do you remember what was happening?
Like, yeah.
Everybody was talking about gangs. Like, that was everything. And everyone tried to stop it. And while everyone's criticizing Biden for writing the bill, nobody's talking about the fact that the Congressional Black Caucus backed it. Every black congressperson voted for it.
Yes, because the gangs were also hurting black people.
Right.
I mean, can we talk about that for a second? I mean, a friend of mine was an intern for the LAPD, and she was analyzing some of their programs. And, you know, she had to interview people who were, it was sort of an after school program that the LAPD had for at risk youth, and like by that I mean like urban youth, by that I mean like black, young black men, right? For them to be involved in extracurricular activities and kind of like recruit them into the LAPD from a young age so that they don't get involved in gangs. And so she was talking to some parents and kids about their experiences. And she told me about, and I was completely clueless as to what it's like to be a young black man, but a mother and a son, and the mother had to hide her son when she would go out with him to the grocery store. She'd have to ask him to like stay in the car, stay hidden, hide him in her jacket, or else the gang members would threaten her and say, you have to have your son deal the drugs for us and be part of our gang, or else we're going to kill you and your son.
Wow.
And that's what she faced. So anybody who's criticizing these crime bills is completely forgetting that black people are absolutely a victim in this and benefited from the reduced crime in these areas.
Yeah. And I think everybody, it seems that most people involved in it now were like, oh, we didn't realize a few of the consequences of it that were bad. But at the time it was built out of good intentions, and we still keep some of it because they're like, well, it wasn't all bad, but,
I mean, they could just do can they do a rewrite and be like, okay, let's examine whole
thing. They could.
Where we went wrong, recalibrate it, redo it in a way so that we keep the good parts and fix the broken parts. Why is everything so complicated?
Right. It's, and especially what it also gets me on Facebook is like the people like who go to me like, oh yeah, well, Biden had that crime bill. And I want to say, you weren't even alive.
Oh my gosh, they don't remember.
You weren't even alive, like, let alone remember. You weren't alive yet. I actually was there remembering. I was there watching it. I was like, oh yeah, good job.
Like, I get scared sometimes when I have to drive through certain parts of Los Angeles, because when I was a child, you didn't go there. in Lion King, like, don't go to the dark place. Yeah. Because you could be killed, you could be shot, you could be mugged, you could be carjacked. You just didn't go there. And I was driving with a friend who came to visit, and we were like downtown, and we had to kind of drive through this certain area. And I kind of like tensed up, and I was suddenly like driving through it, because I remember like, oh, this is the area that my mom is always like, be careful, don't go over there. And my friend was like, you're just saying that because there's black people here. And I'm like, no, it was a very bad area at one point, and I'm not familiar with it. I don't know if it still is. I don't want to get car checked. I don't know. All I know is what I know from the 90s.
I forget exactly what year it was, like something like 2003, 2004. I flew down to LA for this gift show. I was a retailer. I had a retail gift store. And so we were going to go shopping at this gift show down there. And I don't know where in LA, but I think it was near one of the stadiums. Mm-hmm. And it was a little further away than I thought it was. The hotel was a little further than I thought. But we got there, and then we were hungry. And so we went to the front desk and asked, hey, what's a good place to go eat around here? And they looked at us like we were nuts. And they said, oh, you can't go anywhere and eat here. No. It's too dangerous. But here's some takeout. Here's some like places that'll deliver. Like, we're like, what? And then I was like, where the fuck did I pick a kind of hotel did I pick? I had no idea. And I guess it was just, yeah, I just picked the wrong area. But they were not playing. They told us directly, you're not leaving. Like, don't leave. So,
what city was this again?
In LA.
It was okay. LA.
I don't know if it was near Staples Center or.
Sounds like a stadium.
Yeah.
Probably Dodger Stadium, also Staples Center. Yeah, downtown. Yeah, it's terrifying. If the gangs are still there, mind you, like it hasn't gone away. I think there's just a lot of hipsters and stuff who live in like slightly gentrified pockets of places, and they're very PC, and maybe they're not from LA, so they didn't grow up here. So you get people who are like, LA's fine, and you're being racist by having any fear. Look, motherfucker, look at the LAPD crime map and then tell me I'm racist.
Right.
Okay, fuck you. Like, you look at an LA crime map and you'll see, like, there are some areas, it's still messed up. Like, I live in a very, like, lovely pocket that I'm blessed to have grown up in.
Yeah.
And then as I go out from the radius of where I, like, of where I grew up, it just goes, okay, now you see a lot of, like, car break-ins. Go a little further. Oh, I see a bunch of sexual assaults in the next ring. Oh, and there is the homicides. From the gangs. And there's all sorts of gangs. And you know what? There used to be Crips and Bloods. Now there's all kinds of Toony Toons, Froggy Frogs. all sorts of gangs. Like the, you know, they don't have that show Gangland anymore. I'm surprised they ran out of episodes. But if you can Google it, LA crime maps, LA gang maps, they have it all plotted out. San Fernando Valley's gangs are all over. And yeah, no, the cops are necessary. We don't live in a utopia where everybody's perfect, and we need laws that help us to stay safe.
I didn't know you were an economics major, you said?
Yes, I actually have a graduate degree in economics, a master's from UC Santa Barbara.
Okay, how did you get from master's in economics to comedy?
So more like, how did I get from comedy to master's economics?
Oh, okay. Then, was it that way?
So I actually did, I was a performer. I did theater. I did forensics growing up. By forensics, for listeners who aren't aware, that means speech debate. That's the speech component of speech debate, really. It's called forensics. I'm actually a California state champion in forensics, which is cool. That was a lot of fun. It was, you know, amazing. I was really passionate about performing arts. And then when I went to college, it was too expensive to go to the places where I got in for performing arts.
Yeah.
And so I had to rethink things because I knew the cost, and like I was already like a little economist in my head. I'm like, am I really going to take this much debt to pursue my passion when I know that my passion is not likely to pay me a lot of money? Let's be real. And yeah, I did the math and I really liked economics as a subject. And so I bit the bullet and said, all right, this is what I'm going to major in. I can do it. I like it as it's interesting. I was passionate. I was definitely passionate about it. So I kind of set aside that. I still did music. I love music. That was my thing at the time. I wanted to be a music and vocal performance major. When I graduated, and I wanted to be a PhD, actually. I wanted to get a doctorate in economics. But when I was in graduate school, I started to really feel like, okay, this isn't what I thought it was. Because in undergrad, it was actually very policy-oriented. And as I went to graduate school, it was all about the math. It was very, like, it's basically like being a math major or a stats major. It's just all, like, high-level, like, I had to take 2 years of calculus in linear algebra and differential equations just to get the master's degree, right?
Right.
I had to have that knowledge go into it. So to get the PhD, you need more than that. Like, that's just, like, linear algebra is just the beginning for a PhD in economics. So I would have to take, like, real analysis and all of these other math classes that I was just not prepared to, because I had to bust my, like, math isn't my natural thing.
Yeah.
So I had to bust my ass just to get through the calculus classes that I did take. By the time I was done with UC Santa Barbara's master's program, I was like, I just want to make money and live my life. So I went out, I got a job as a financial analyst, a corporate job, and I hated it so desperately much. I'm like, this cannot be my life.
Yeah.
I went away from performing arts for this. Econ was interesting, but the actual job is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't getting jobs actually doing economics or analysis or behavioral stuff, which I finally actually am doing in my day job. More behavioral and market research was really fun. But it took me a long time to in my journey to go from where I started as just a financial analyst to doing actual research on people's behavior, which is something I'm very passionate about, and it kind of goes well with comedy. So that's when I started doing stand-up, when I was a financial analyst, you know, my first full-time job.
So I started doing comedy when I was a financial analyst.
Yeah.
Like, as they do.
As financial analysts are wont to do. Well, because I'm not supposed to be. Like, my personality wasn't made for that.
Yeah.
I'm actually a manager at my job. I have to hire people and build teams and come up with who's going to be the right person for this job. And let me tell you, I wouldn't hire me. Well, I mean, maybe I would, but I'd really have to pass my own litmus tests. And by that, I mean, I try to look for people who are like detail-oriented, kind of quiet introverts who I know are going to catch every little mistake and error and like perfect work. And that's like a certain kind of person that I have like my mental profile of what that personality is, like someone who's kind of like mousy and secretly like likes anime. I'm like, is this the OCD adorable little geek who's going to do a great job on my team? And that's why I hire someone who walks in with like a gregarious personality. I'm like, I'm going to do you a favor and not hire you for this job where you need to be sitting in a cube just whittling away at numbers.
Do your people at work, if you didn't tell them, or if you do, would they know that you're a comedian?
I don't think so. Actually, when I have told them, they do get very surprised.
I've wondered about that. Like, it has made me realize, like, talking to some other people and finding out what they do for work, sometimes I'm shocked. And like, as a comedian, like, what, you do that? And I've wondered, like, gosh, it makes me think about what are the secret lives of all these people that I talk to, that, you know, like
other people at work, we're comedians, but what do they
do? What do you do? What are you into? You know, like, it's also like when you see these like societies that you're like, oh, a bunch of these are freaks. Like, you know, that they're just like these swingers clubs are filled with people working at Amazon, or like, you know, they're the tech guy, the plumber who came in, you have no idea. And it's like, so whenever I find out some new club or something, I'm always like, wow, that could be, that's the person next to me. Secret life.
I mean, I think with single people, yes, I think single people have secret weird lives. I think married people have children.
Married people also turn out to be weirdos.
Yes, maybe. I don't know. I feel like kids just sound like such a, they take over your life. I mean, how do you handle that? So you've got your kids, and stand up, and you're a real estate agent.
Yeah.
Your business.
Well, it's I'd make more money if I didn't have two of those three things, I think. But I think it's all about with a partner. My wife has been very, from the get-go, before we were married, she started telling me, if you need to go out, because I'd have my daughter, she's from the previous marriage, I never wanted her to like have to feel like she's babysitting her or something, right? But she was like, if you need to go out, go, you know? And so I became selective on the weeks that I had my daughter of what nights. I wouldn't do open mics, but I started doing shows. If I could get a booking, I would do that. And she's never, my wife doesn't really go to my comedy shows unless it's a specific performer that I'm like, you will definitely like them, because she kind of hates amateur comedy.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Well, I used to think that she didn't like, she used to think she didn't like comedy that much. She didn't think she liked stand up that much. And she came to realize, like, oh, it's just bad comedy. Like, I'm like, yeah, well, everyone hates bad. But hers is like, she definitely likes more highbrow. She likes smart comedians. Jake Johansson is one of her favorites. You know, Tom Papa. We both enjoy the, she definitely likes cleaner comedy. but I just, you know, I juggle it and I get them involved in some ways, or it's part of it. So I don't, in some ways I don't stress about it. Like someone said it was adorable last year when I was directing a movie for the 48-hour film project up here. You know, we're near the end of the last scene and I stopped production because my kids were going to bed. And so they were coming out to say goodnight to me. So I stopped, just like in the podcast, you know, they came out like, all right. So I said goodnight to them and they got right back into action and we just finished the movie. And it's just, yeah, I just roll them into it. And I rock on real estate when they're taking a nap. And then I really don't know any other way. Like, I don't know. I feel like I've always been busy. I haven't been doing as much comedy lately. Partly just evaluating things that I want to do. I really like filmmaking and podcasting and I don't know, like, yeah, you can't do them all great. So you have to,
pick.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been moving myself up, trying to do a more sketch, although I think I won't be able to shoot any of the sketches I want to do until after these quarantines are over, which, by the way, a friend of mine said, be ready for this stuff to drag on for a couple of months.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. You're an economist, so you know math, right? So you've probably seen some of the math on this and know that.
You know, I haven't because I don't want to.
Okay. Then I will not share my resources with you.
Share
okay.
It.
We'll do this offline because I don't want to. But hey, I'm about done or about to my time limit here. But I have to ask you the questions the first time. Questions. Yeah, hold on. I grab my phone here. All right. First time guest on here. I've been asking my homage. Seven questions or six. Okay. So what are you most nerdy about?
What am I most nerdy about? Latin American dictators.
That's awesome. Okay.
Go figure. And behavioral economics. But yeah.
Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Sushi.
What's something that you love to drink?
Chocolate milk.
What kind of music do you love?
Oh, gosh. Folk pop and rock. Folk as a genre. Like First Aid Kit or Brandi Carlile, for example.
Okay. What do you love to create?
Comedy.
What's a game you love to play?
I like to play with people's minds. No, I'm kidding. Oh gosh, I haven't played a lot of games in a while, but you know what I've been playing lately? Best Fiends. It's like Candy Crush. It's so Best Fiends.
Best Fiends?
Yes, Best Fiends.
Best Fiends. Yeah. Okay. I thought I was not hearing it right. Okay, the last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
God, that's a good question. Wow, way to fuck up my week. No, I'm kidding. Gosh, you know, I've never really thought about that. That's a really good question. You know, as much as I'm like, oh, I want to be remembered for being like really funny or like being really smart and having good observations, I hope that I would have, you know what? I hope I'll have mentored some people into doing awesome things. Even if I don't do something awesome, I hope I will have been known to be an excellent mentor.
Great. The world needs teachers.
Yes.
Kat, thank you so much for coming on. Stand by to
receive our transmission. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And stand by to receive our keep it black and a half.
Stand by. Live long and prosper.